Welcome to New Human Living Radio Show, bringing you powerful interviews to awaken the power in you. Learn more at newhumanliving.com. And now your host, Les Jensen.
Welcome to the show tonight. I'm so glad you chose to join us. I think you've picked an excellent episode to tune into. Tonight, the title of our show is Building the Culture of Heart, and our guest tonight is Susanna Bear, and we're going to delve into the notion of your relationship with money, sex, and power, a meditation perspective. It's always fun having guests on that live from the heart, and I think tonight will be no exception to that. One of the phrases that I ponder as I go through my life is, blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall know God. And I like changing just one word in that, blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall know creation. It's this idea that has been talked about for eons of time, that we are all one. There's one heart, there's one consciousness, and we're all points of presence of the one. And I always love talking about the heart. For me, it seems like it's the portal to the n-dimensional aspect of the etherical, the non-physical aspect of our personal power, if you will, and to purify your heart and then get your mind and your the rest of your persona, if you will, to be able to trust that, to be able to stay present in that and not flinch when the power shows up. That's kind of the learning stage of knowing how to live from the heart and allow the heart to be powerful without dropping into reaction or avoiding anything like that. So without further ado, I want to have as much time as we deserve to talk about this topic. I'd like to welcome to the show Susanna Bear. Welcome to the show.
Hello, Les. Good evening. Good afternoon. So nice that you invited me to your show, and I really, really loved your introduction. That you speak so well about the heart, and that is really the main topic of our organization. My husband and I, we founded in 1987, I Am Heart, which means, you know, an Institute of Applied Meditation focused only on the heart. And so for more than 25 years, all our work is about meditation, but all of our meditation is focused on the heart. And because that's such an important topic, and, you know, it really makes a change in one's life, and as you mentioned earlier, one's power really comes through, and a lot of one has a different perspective about life when one has a heart-focused identity than when one has big questions, you know, why I'm here and what am I doing here and what is my power? And the heart is just such a powerful instrument, you know, that exists on the physical level where it gives us rhythm, and on an emotional level where all the emotions come from, the energy of the emotions. And on a further level, you know, where we, through the heart, experience spirit. And in that way, we can experience that we are energetic spiritual beings living in this body, in this time on earth, and trying to fulfill our purpose. So that is just so powerful and so exciting to live in this time with that awareness and that consciousness. And so I go every year on a tour here in America through anywhere between 7 to 12 different states. And this year, in 2016, my topic was the culture of the heart. And this is a topic which we have developed over years. And it really focuses on health, relationships, and accomplishments, and on spiritual connection. And and this is the ability of the heart, you know, when you focus on the physical heart has the ability to really create physical health, heart health. And when the heart is healthy, usually the rest of the body moves into rhythm and health and balance. And so it goes on with, because the heart, when you focus with it on through the breath, it opens up the emotional heart. And in the same way as the physical body moves into balance, the emotional body moves into balance. And if you keep staying over a long time in meditation, eventually you enter into the spirit and you experience that your breath is spirit and your heart opens up to these wonderful dimensions of love and light and spirit itself. And so that is how the culture of the heart, when through people who experience these inner powers and manifest them outwardly, that creates a different kinds of culture and awareness. And
I like what you said, that the love seems to be the blood of the etherical realm of the heart, if you will. And to even talk the culture of the heart, the word culture in a traditional sense is our community, is our quote way of life, unquote. And then to bring the culture of your own personal heart to the collective culture is a powerful journey right there. So, I mean, I'm really touched by you and Puran's work. We had him on the show just a few weeks ago, and I love this topic of the heart. As you've evolved over the decades, working with your own heart space, what kind of things surprised you about that journey as you got to learn more and more about your heart?
Well, you know, what is wonderful working with the heart, you know, is that what I experienced, that there's a lot of healing that can happen through working with the heart in one's own personal life. You know, one heals the wounds of the heart, you know, because we all go through life and life has the tendency to wound us or to bring challenges towards us. And so what comes through that is that one learns by giving the heart energy, and the energy comes through the breath. The heart and one's own life gets more whole, and one comes to an understanding of who one really is. You know, I remember very well in my early years, that was the biggest question for me, this question, who am I and what am I doing here and what is life about? And when one moves deeply into the heart, you know, one has the possibility to not disassociate for what one is and what all is about, but one can move deeply into it and can truly become oneself. And what was for me too, you know, because in the I grew up in a very religious way. I come from another country, as you might hear from my accent. I'm Austrian. I come from Austria, and like in Austria, the religion is very Catholic. And so for me, it was very wonderful to learn through the heart about, you know, how one can free oneself up from certain belief systems. And, you know, in our school, we teach too about the energy centers, the chakras. And in particular, you know, all spiritual traditions, most of the time, just teach about the so-called spiritual energy centers, which is the heart center, the throat center, the third eye, and the crown. And the first three centers, the root center, the sexual center, and the solar plexus, they are often hardly touched. And we have developed in our school this notion that the heart is so powerful and so strong that it actually holds all the centers. So we like to have the feeling to bring the heart to the root center, to bring the heart to the second center, to bring the heart to the solar plexus. And that made such a difference. It gave me such a different understanding of who I am and what those energies are. Because those energies, they are very often in the spiritual world and in the religious world, in particular in Catholicism, you're being taught, well, if you want to have, a good life, be a good Christian, or be a good Catholic, you stay away from those dangerous things like money, sex, and power. So, and through heart rhythm meditation, through working with the heart, when I entered those kind of topics, it made a big difference in my life.
Well, you know, I kind of grew up with the same kind of imprinting. I grew up in a very stout Mormon household, and oftentimes when I share in spirituals gatherings, I'll talk about how Mormonism pointed me in the total opposite direction that God was in. And it sounds like you had some of the same kind of influence. Your soul chose to start your life off in a household that wouldn't even talk about these PowerPoints in the first, second, and third chakras. I'm always fascinated by the how divine or wise our souls are to get our curious minds fired up by putting us in a caustic environment of the truth, if you will. So when you talk about, I mean, the heart chakra is the center chakra, and you were just talking about the first three chakras, and to bring that heart space into these lower chakras, that's for our culture, that's where a lot of the most perhaps the word is severe or comprehensive karmic imprinting has happened to us both individually and collectively. To bring that heart space down into those chakras, there's got to be a lot of opportunity to heal so much of our past.
That's right. That's right. There's a great opportunity there to heal our collective past and our personal past, you know, because the collective past, you know, that we have been taught is that, you know, the first chakra, the root chakra, you know, which is very important because, you know, to be rooted in the life here, but at the same time, the root chakra talks about the eternity of our past. And then it talks about being rooted in the here and now, and then it talks about the eternity of our future. So that's when we leave this plane, what do we leave behind? And that is sort of our purpose. And the past, you know, all of our training, yours and mine, we were taught, you know, live this life in poverty. You know, if you want to be really religious, and if you want to be really close to God, you don't care about money, you don't care about wealth, you don't care about anything, you just live
right.
Poverty, just like the birds, and God will take care of you. Well, today I think all those people are more or less homeless, and somebody has to take care.
Yeah, right. Yeah, sure.
Especially the American culture is not that kind. I think in Thailand or in some other countries, you still see monks and they belong to begging orders, right? They have orange robes on, and they put their bowl in front of somebody's house, and they put some food in there. And they sleep in some kind of monastery in very simple ways. But I do think this kind of attitude of practicing poverty in this way, I think it fit with a certain time, but it does not empower the human being to be here in this lifetime, because not all of us have the purpose to be poor. I do think some of us have a purpose to actually train our muscles, you know, in order to struggle with our environment and find out what is my purpose to be here. And, you know, we have schooling and we have all these great opportunities, and we can become who we are in order to contribute to the whole, that the whole universe unfolds, and each one of us is sort of a messenger or a manifestation of the one to contribute to the whole. And that is very hard to do if you have a vow of poverty. I think there you're very much somebody else decides upon what your purpose is. And I think in today's day and age, I think spiritual teachings have evolved to empower the individual to deal actually with money and with the physical challenges that we have. What am I here and what is mine to do? And what that creates with oneself, that inner struggle and that inner strive, I think is internal peace. You know, this is, I think it's always very interesting, because I do think what the traditions of the olden age, if it's Vedanta, Buddhism, Christianity, or Islam even, looks for is, through poverty I attain internal peace. And the skill is to deal with money in that way in today's day and age, that I'm not being hunted by money, you know, and by all the greed and distractions that money can bring by consumerism, but that I have the ability to see money is something that flows through people's hands, and we have it in order, because it's really an energetic exchange, to more or less. And if I know how to deal with it wisely, it creates internal peace instead of consumerism. And because I think you find plenty of people who have plenty of money and live in poverty consciousness. So those are the interesting things that we as human beings, I think, have to pass through.
Sure.
You know, Les, I have to tell you a little story. You know, as I travel a lot and are even from another country, this spring when I was in Austria, I actually gave this, the culture of the heart, I gave this seminar there as well. At the same time while I was there in Switzerland, they had a vote if every Swiss citizen was supposed to get 2,000 Swiss francs a month for their lively support.
Right.
It didn't matter how much money they, you know about that?
I've heard about that, yes, and I like it.
Yeah. Isn't that an interesting approach? So it wouldn't be welfare or it wouldn't be food stamps, but everybody just gets 2,000 Swiss francs if it's a child or a grown-up. So if you have one child in a family household, you could get 6,000 Swiss francs. And
yes,
that would sort of create like a base foundation for everybody to live and sort of create safety for the family. I thought that's just a very, very nice idea, but it didn't go through yet.
Well, to me, it seems like it's the seeding of a concept. And in order for that seeding to land in our consciousness, it has to have a place within our own psyche where it can be in equilibrium with our own energy. You know, as you're talking here, when you think about the birth of a soul or the birth of anything, that idea of in the beginning was the light. And from the light, all of creation came from that light. And now we fast forward a few eons of time, and here we are on planet Earth in 2016, and the collective storyline is this centuries of just atrocities, of scarring our human psyche so deeply. I mean, how can a powerful, infinite being play out the role of a victim or even the role of a villain unless we take that immense amount of power that is our divine truth and we suppress it somewhere? And our chakras are an energetic model of what that suppression looks like. And our root chakra is the spectral opposite, if you will, of the light. That's our connection to the earth, and that's where our chakras, the model of the chakra stop is that first chakra. So to load all that up with that imprinting from the past and then turn around and go back in and start cleaning house and start dissipating and discharging all the places we hid our power, if you will, within our own psyche, that I suggest after that 2012 transition, we're coming out of the negative cycle of a sine wave into the positive cycle of expression. I think it'll be much more commonplace for people to manifest out of their inherent divine essence, if you will. And what a journey that is to go from, like you were saying, the idea of spirituality requires for some the surrender of anything physical, and yet the physical is the canvas of expression itself. We're living in really exciting times, and you know, bringing our heart, bringing the essence of our heart to these aspects of our own persona is the journey itself. I mean, I really like how you're folding this. And another thing I really liked about what you said is the eternity of our past and the eternity of our future. So what the hell do we have to worry about now?
That's right. Well, the thing is what we have to worry about now, if I may answer that, the way how we see it, Les, is that to fulfill our purpose, you know, we think that each one of us has something to contribute. And with this concept of the past, you know, with poverty, chastity, and obedience especially, it's a lot of people are being held from contributing what they are here for. And I just find this is why this time is so exciting, even in the sense of that we are billions of us are here. Do you see? So there are these power structures are still in place. But if this obedience moves into power, like you mentioned so often, which in our chakra system would be the third center, you know, the solar plexus, because that's, can you imagine, instead of obedience that opens up to power, you know, and we think very much what really is the battery for this third chakra is the truth. You see, when we get in touch with the truth of our being, you know, then the power is really turned on within ourselves. You know, and this is nobody can be put into obedience or can be distracted into anything if they have the ability to get in touch with themselves. What is my truth and what is the truth? You know, each one of us has an individual truth. you know, that we go by. This is right, this is wrong, and we can say yes and no to things. But then there is the truth, and then our heart, our being gets in touch with that. There is just silence, and these powers who try to manipulate you into obedience or into whatever their war machines and all these distractions that happen on this planet at this point, you know, because what we are going through, Les, and I think you are very much in agreement with that too, I assume, is that there is really a decay of the principles of the cosmic order going on through this big change that we are going through in this new age, in these new times. And so there's, like, I think, a lot of interest out there in the outer world of control. And that is the opposite of power. And if each one of us uses to go to the inner dimensions of power and feel the truth, this is where our true strength is, and this is where our true belief system can come from. And power stops being scary because stops being intimidating if we can access our own truth, which is related to power. And that way we can unfold and fulfill that what we are here for.
Do you feel like the students you work with have an inherent sense of fear of this personal power that's within their own being?
Well, fear is often not the case, but there is an unconsciousness of it there in the beginning. You know, like we have in our school a two-year program, a two-year university, and actually, you know, we hold our students through the 9 steps of realization, which sometimes goes over 10 years. And that is very much one of the incentives of our school, to empower people to really feel their power and become fearless. One of our steps on the path is to recognize fearlessness. And whatever needs to be done can be done. And to stand up for one's belief system, you know, and that is true power. It is not power over, but to empower others, because the heart is very sensitive and feels others. So there is never overpowering others, but to empower others and at the same time stand up for one's own power and belief system, but it's always connected to purpose. So,
sure.
And that comes then to the third part, you know, which is sex, and in the olden days it was chastity. And you know what is very important to know about sex and chastity? By chastity, it's always called, you know, purity, to live the pure life. Somehow, I think the church has had the ability, or at least I just can talk here for myself. I won't say anybody else did anything wrong or right, but it's my experience that there was always with sex, there's something like dirty, or you should stay away from it because it's, I do not know, it's not safe and it's not good. Somehow that kind of message was, in my young age, spread through. And of course, one breaks through those taboos. But what is really discouraged through chastity is that people are being creative. You know, through sexuality, the ultimate force or the ultimate ability is to procreate. So the word creativity is in that word, and it's we are connected, or we are one with the creator itself through the sexual power, and it's through procreation. But if you leave procreation out of the sexual energy and feel the sexual energy, it makes you very creative. It creates pleasure. It creates acceptance of life. which I think chastity all cuts down and removes, you know, like when, you know, I have traveled quite a bit, and I had even a sister and a great aunt who were nuns, you know, and it's this poverty, chastity, and obedience sort of removes you from life, while money, sexuality, and power invites you to life. I mean, there might be stress and struggles there with it, but that is what helps us to build this new world if we feel the powers underneath these kind of forces that are available to us. After all, you know, through sexuality, especially if it is consciously performed, we have the ability to call invisible beings into this world. I mean, what a power that is. You know, and if we do it very consciously and aware, we can even communicate with those beings before we call them. You know, I know very well before my son was born, I had a connection with him. And it was so exciting, you know, to carry him in my body. And then when he was born, I remember the moment when he was born. And I looked into his eyes, and it was like we knew each other.
Wow.
You know what I mean? What an experience. Do you know what I mean? And whom would say to stay away from that experience? Or just be chaste all your life? I don't know, you know, whoever wants to do this is very welcome to do this, but there are these real deep miracles of life that we are invited to celebrate and to be part of, and that is the one being living through us and being through us and celebrating his and her abilities to be here in the now. So I just think that is the possibility of sex. As many dangers as it may have, according to a lot of people.
They always tell us the powerful things are dangerous. The realm of our sexuality, I mean, I can only speak for myself. If you get two beings that understand unconditional love, and then they come together in that intimate sexual space, and they're empty of any posture or stance. And through that vehicle of unconditional love, I suggest the flipping rules of the universe start to wane and soften, and that all things become pliable. And I think we're... our sexuality is kind of hardwired into our experience as kind of a constant reference book, if you will, of what it means to show up in a passionate way. And that's where you run short on words and you have to slip into poetry, because it's just... that the communion of two people in unconditional love is just a phenomenal space. So I totally like what you're saying. And I really see a thread here with your upbringing where you were born into a dynamic that pointed you in the total opposite direction, chastity, poverty, you know, stay away from those power centers. Hey, don't play with that, you know.
Yeah, it's fun to discover.
But
I do think most people are trained, you know. I do think that's the training in today's world. That's how the control works. And I think what I find very interesting in today's world is we are in this, I would call, transitional times. The new times haven't completely kicked in yet. There is a lot of money out there, so to say, for some people, and there is a lot of sex out there for some people, but there is a lot of confusion about all those topics out there.
Indeed.
And the same with power. And I think the skill is, you know, to have the ability to have techniques to move deeply into oneself and heal, you know, the the problems with money, sexuality, and power, you know, and that comes by breathing into the heart and expanding that kind of energy in, for example, into one's sexual center, whatever the, because very often sexual centers are shut down when people feel guilty, people feel embarrassed, people have a lot of shame, you know, all those kinds of emotions need to be worked through in order to be what you were saying, that people can experience their unconditional love for each other again and create a different life with each other. And so through the breath and heart, expanding this energy to the first, second, and third center, that healing, this is what we promote very much in our school, you know, in our IAmHeart.org, that school, because, you know, when you work with the heart, it's something new being created for people. These paradigms of poverty and shame and I think a lot of people are tired of this, and because it creates too much isolation.
Sure.
So, yeah. But this is,
well,
yeah.
It disconnects us from having a sense of presence, if you will. In we've been told it's not our role to be the one of change. That's for the Pope or the priest or the prophet or whatever the hell. Not you, somebody else. They have the red phone to the divine. And yet there's still that language, the Father and I are one, which would be mean now, you know, my divinity is here now. There's no thing I can add to myself to make me more divine. I can get lost in the darkness. I can disconnect from my power, but all consciousness is illuminated by the one mind. It's really a fascinating time, because even for us to have this conversation was really unheard of 50 years ago, 100 years ago, in any kind of a volume, in any kind of a sense of popularity, if you will. And this kind of subject, I think, is the stuff people are really hungry for.
Mm-hmm. I agree with you. You know, they are very hungry because, you know, I do think, you know, through the 60s, there was a lot of liberation of sexuality. And when you look out into the world today, it's unbelievable how liberated we are sexuality. But the question is still, do people find fulfillment and happiness through their life together in their sexuality, or is it all just, I do not know what, I don't want to go further into those names. So
posturing.
That is, I think, that's very, what did you say?
Posturing, various forms of posturing.
That's right.
Delay a game.
You know, right. You can see that the dating games, you know, through all these dating sites that are out there, it seems to be more difficult today to find somebody where one can agree to, and I think that has too to do how women have different expectations. So there's so much change going on, and as we both very much agree that the heart plays a big difference in there. But, you know, so there's sexuality, but what I think what is for people a topic that is much less talked about as sexuality, because sexuality is all over the place. And people talk a lot about money because we have gone through so much money printing in the past decades that we are overwhelmed and flooding in money and at the same time in debt. So these are very interesting topics. But the topic that people don't talk about much is power. You know, this third chakra that I mentioned, and this actually speak in our school too, that people can have physical power you know, or they can have mental power, or they can have power of heart, or they can even have where you feel somebody has a very powerful soul and somebody has a very powerful spirit. You know, and these kinds of powers make a big difference, you know, and it gives you a big difference where you put your attention, where you put your consciousness, what is important in life. You know, because people who have physical power, you know, they can easily knock you over, right? And people who have mental power, you know, those could be scientists or great writers or, you know, great speakers and all that. But people who have a powerful heart, right, like Mother Teresa,
yes,
or people like this, they can make, there we come into like a different kind of realm of power.
Indeed.
And, and see, when one divides it into these parts of physical power, mental power, heart power, soul power, and spiritual power, I think it becomes less scary, because most of the time when you talk to people, they're afraid of power, and especially they're afraid of being overpowered. And they're very unconscious of what kind of power do I have? And am I interested in what kind of power would I like to develop if I have a choice? You know, what is it that I bring to this world that I'm like, this is where I want to put all my consciousness, all my awareness, that I have a powerful heart and I want to feel the source of my being, my soul. And I, you know, like when we do our healings in our school, we have a specific program in healing. We actually bring in one part of the healing, spiritual power. And that is the power that really heals. You see? And so when you focus on those kinds of things, it's like, all right, I want to do that. And one becomes unafraid. You see? Because I think power is for a lot of people very intimidating.
Well, how do you help them overcome that intimidation of power and heal their relationship with the idea of power? I think for an awful lot of us, the purpose our soul had in mind in this lifetime was to become reacquainted and skilled and master our divine power within. I mean, how do you bring somebody to come to terms with that? Because it's a very, very powerful arena to move into if you were raised in a culture that told you anything but that.
Well, you know, we really work step by step through our meditation practices. You know, it's really working with breath and heart. And in the beginning, our students feel quite successful with breath and heart. You know, these are the beginner steps and they go very well. The difficulties start where they feel this unworthiness, and they feel, when the heart opens up further to the emotional part. When people learn in the beginning through the breath to find their physical heart, you know, their heartbeat, and that's not always easy for everybody because, you know, we spend all our life to hide our heart. And I have even taught, it was interestingly in a bookstore, we brought out one of our books, I don't know which one it was, and I gave a presentation in the bookstore, and the Buddhist monk came to this presentation. And I was like, wow, what will I be able to teach this? I could see he was, you know, a little bit aged. And afterwards, when I talked with him, I found out he was for 30 years a Buddhist monk who had been all his Buddhist monk life, focusing on the heart. And there he comes to my heart presentation. And I felt it. I was like, well, I wonder. And so I did my little meditation instruction and my talk about the heart. And it was about, you know, breathe and try to feel your heartbeat and see if you can feel and hear it and, you know, feel it pulsing and see what does it say to you. So those were the beginning instructions. And this monk said to me afterwards, you know, I'm so grateful that you gave these instructions. And I said, well, you have to share with me now, why is it that this is important to you? You have done this for so long. He said, but I never listened to my physical heart. I always imagined my heart. You see, and there is a very key element there, because when people start really listening to their physical heart, then you're dealing with your own heart that has experienced your lifetime, and your ancestors' lifetime is in your heart, and all the people that live in your heart that you love and that you hate are all in your heart. And so when the heart opens up further and you open up to the emotional field of your heart, then you deal with, you know, your early years, because the first chakra has actually to do with the first 10 years of your life.
Sure.
And when you feel this, and even before, right, the incarnations time are there too, the eternal path. And when you get in touch with that, well, that is where the healing can start taking place, and where the unworthiness or the abuse or the rejection, the neglect, and all that happened. And that needs to be healed first. And, you know, when we keep breathing, then, you know, the next 10 years would be the sexual center from 10 to 20. This is where the sexuality really comes to life, and their people have their experiences, and through the breath we start dealing with this. And so it takes quite a bit of time of healing, and we have in our school like private retreats where people, actually tomorrow I have two people come, one from Pennsylvania and one from another state, and they are here for 7 days. And they meditate from 3 o'clock in the morning till 9 o'clock at night. And they're being taken care of, you know, with food. And I visit them for twice a day for an hour. And I go over instructions, which meditations they do. But in those kinds of intense environments, that's where with very safe meditation practices, you deal with those issues that your life has created and the belief systems that we have embraced. You know, that we are victims and that we are unworthy and that we don't have any power and all this. I have one of those students currently, and we identify this as steps of realization. And through this heart and breath practices, this is how the healing occurs. And people, eventually, this is the seven steps on the path where people experience this light, that I'm actually a being of light, I'm a being of unconditional love. And they experience this. This is not something we teach them, where we tell them you are that, but they are getting their own personal experience of this through the practices, through the intensity of that we expose them to.
Well, very nice. The you talk about people coming to your center. Why don't we shift the dialogue of the show and talk about the platform that you two have created, and what kind of ways the audience can engage your books, the center you have in Tucson, and just share with us your platform.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, we have a great website, which is www.iamheart.org. And on that website, you find all of our books. We have three books out so far, Living from the Heart, Energize Your Heart, and Follow Your Heart. So they're always all about the heart. And some people even learn the meditation just by doing the books, and we have always a complementarity CDs. We have on the website a podcast where you can download, I think, all these little meditations. They go from 5 minutes to an hour and an hour and a half. They come from, you know, they are recorded from retreats, or sometimes we create them for it. We have videos on our website. And we do regularly every year about four group retreats. We have one in Sedona every year, and one we have in Santa Barbara, California. We do one in London, in England, and we do one in Taiwan this year, and we will be two in Korea and in China, in Shenzhen, and we will be doing programs there. We have regular web courses going for the public, and our next web course will be starting in January 11th. That's a 101 web course where we teach the basic practices on how to connect breath and heart. And then we're going to bring out a 100 web course, which will be probably for free, where people just get acquainted with breath and what the heart can be. So it doesn't have these very clear instructions, because for a lot of people, heart and breath is actually quite new. That's just like getting acquainted with the topic. We do have a two-year program. The two-year program that we roll out starts every year in the fall, and we take about 25 students into that program. And they go through 8 web courses in those 2 years. The web courses are always 2 months long, 8-week web courses, and they increase. You know, they are so gradually the people learn better and better how to breathe and how to meditate, and the experience go deeper and deeper. And it goes even that far that in the second year they have a project where they say, for example, I want to reduce my blood pressure, you know, or I would like to lose weight, or I would like to write a book. One person really started writing a whole drama, and this is all with the support of meditation. So that's why it's interesting. And so it's 8 web courses, and then it has two group retreats, and then it has one personal retreat, like I described before, for 7 days. That's in the second year. And we have in our school mentors, because we think that this work of the heart is like so, how should I tell you, intensive. You know, it really engages yes. people differently. And because, you know, this is what this Buddhist monk that I mentioned to you earlier said too. You know, he said, if you imagine your heart, there is no pain. Who would imagine a heart with pain? But if you deal with your heart, you will encounter pain. And pain is when you have the courage to deal with your pain, and breath helps you with it. It really opens up the doors of the heart, and healing can happen. Pain is sort of the doorway to the light. Isn't that an interesting insight?
Oh, sure, yes.
So, yeah. It's, you know, it's Jalaluddin Rumi says this, the womb is the place where the light enters you. Isn't that an interesting thing? And the question is, why don't we like to go to those places? And it's just because it hurts a little bit, right?
Sure.
But if you have a mentor, and if you have some technique to enter there, then we willingly go there and light can enter. So that is a real skill. So this is a two-year program that prepares people to live life fully and embrace, you know, their power, embrace their joy of sexuality, and embrace money as something that helps us all to evolve further.
If our listeners are not at any of these locations, there's still quite a bit of content. And I want to make sure I understand it right. Is there classes that are totally online? So if they're in some other place, they can still engage your material completely over the internet?
Well, thank you for clarifying this, Les. We have web courses. Our school is, I think, a pioneer school of web courses. My husband, Puran, he's an IT specialist, and we had web courses already in 1998. We had our web courses. You could learn meditation through the computer, and we evolved them continuously. And our two-year program is 75% online. We have students, as I say, from Taiwan, from Canada, from South Africa, from all over the world, from England, Europe, Austria, because it's 75 online. So, and we teach every year web a group retreat in England, and so people fly to England to do a group retreat there because that's part of the course. And our mentoring is all online, through Skype or through Zoom. So our school, we actually don't have a big university building. We try to move around so that people cut down on airlines and so on, and that it's really accessible. So, but we have lots of web courses and podcasts, and we do online seminars on a weekly basis. So that's all available. If you go to our website, www.iamheart.org, you get all that information.
Well, very nice. You know, an hour can go by pretty fast, and I just want to make sure that I tell you what a delight it's been having you on the show.
Oh.
Both you and Puran have such a dedication to convey to humanity the introduction and of people to their heart. And what a, oh my God, that sentence right there is such a beautiful thing. And you guys have been doing this for so long, it's old hat. I'm projecting, but it, you guys just live it all the time. You're never off. You're never out of your heart space. And it's really quite evident that everything that you do comes from your heart. So is there any closing comment you want to share with us?
Well, I do hope that, money, sex, and power will find their sacredness again, and people will find peace, love, and truth by dealing with money, sex, and power, and don't get too much distracted through the outer world from that. But I think it's a great opportunity that we have come to that individual beings are empowered to feel the one being, that we live as that, and peace, love, and truth is really what's behind money, sex, and power. So thank you so much, Les, for having me on your show. I look forward to meeting you once in person.
Yeah, I'm sure we will. Our paths will cross. I'm going to be in Tucson in March for the book fair there, but it's been such a delight having you on the show. Thanks for being with us. We've been talking with Susanna Bear, and the topic tonight has been building the culture of heart with a focus on your relationship with money, sex, and power, a meditation perspective. Both Puran and Susanna Bear, I totally recommend if you've listened to either of these shows or both these shows, that you engage their material because they have such an authentic and pure approach to bringing you into your heart space with such compassion and such sincerity in their purpose. We're all here to rediscover the truth of who we are, and the truth comes from within you. Thanks for joining us tonight. I'm your host, Les Jensen. Until next time.
This has been a New Human Living Radio broadcast.
to bring your soul's inspiration into effect and live your life wide open. Check out our host, Les Jensen's latest book, Citizen King, The New Age of Power, at newhumanliving.com. Thanks for listening.